Freelance Mum, the mother of all networking. Come and join our awesome online and offline community, which supports all your business needs, including child-friendly networks across the UK, plus our weekly online coffee morning. I'm Faye Dicker, voiceover artist and founder of Freelance Mum, and here's this week's podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Freelance Mum podcast. This is a mini-series which is specifically themed along the themes of inspire and inclusion in the run-up to this year's International Women's Day. And as part of that, I wanted to interview some amazing women and hear about their stories along those themes of inspire and inclusion. And today, I'm absolutely delighted to welcome one of our Freelance Mum members from the North Somerset Hub, Jo Millett from Lee Content. Good morning, Jo. It's lovely to have you here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here, Jo. It's lush to have you here. We first connected just before Christmas, didn't we, on the North Somerset Network? And you're a straight-talking, funny woman. And you use that a lot in your marketing and your style, and it's great. How have you found that in a very male-dominated world, being someone who does shoot from the hip and has the ability to make people laugh?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, first of all, it was just lovely to meet you. Just, you know, because it's International Women's Day, I wanted to say how much of a support and help Freelance Mum has been for me. And it's really been so positive. So thank you for having me. In terms of being a straight talker, I think it's just who I am. Mm. So growing up, I'm from the East Midlands, around where I'm from, people just are quite straight and direct. Mm. It's famous for its pork pies. It's, you know, it's a straight talking place. Mm. And before I set up my own business, I was a teacher for 10 years and I taught in challenging schools. Mm. And it meant that I wasn't backwards in coming forwards with my students and they appreciated that. And so that just developed as part of my character. And then when I left teaching, I got into stand-up comedy. And again, the same thing continued where there was this back and forth between me and the audience, a conversation, just like there's a conversation between you and the kids, there's a conversation between you and the audience. And I think people find it refreshing when they get a woman who is sort of self-possessed mm. and unafraid. And that's me. I'm not afraid of a big meeting with lots of men. I'm not afraid of a comedy audience. I'm not afraid of a classroom full of big kids. I'm basically just, I think in myself and in my heart, just a people person. And so I assume that people have inherently like a good nature. Mm. And I'm curious about people. I want to get to know them. I want to find out about them. And I don't mind, I know, being challenged at work. I don't see it as a bad thing if I get difficult questions from a client, and I don't worry about getting challenging meetings. I don't worry about being heckled as a comedian. It never bothered me. It's just, for me as a person, I sort of almost thrive on it, I think. And my closest friends, I'd say our relationship is often, you know, there's a lot of humour, there's a lot of straight talk, and that's just me. And I know I probably need to tone it down a bit, but I have to say, like, I don't know, it's just part of me, isn't it?
No, I think keep being more you, Jo. Like, don't tone it down. Don't dial it back. Keep being more you. That can be. There is only one you, and the world needs as much of you as possible because you are amazing. There's so many bits of your story that I want to pick out here. So I'm going to try and do it in the logical order, though my butterfly brain is naturally going, I got so many questions I want to ask you. So I don't know what would be the most scary thing. Teaching, because you talked at secondary school, didn't you? Teaching at secondary or doing stand-up comedy, would you say that one helped inform the other?
Probably. I think there's a certain personality type that enjoys comedy, and there's a certain type of person as well who enjoys the cut and thrust of teaching. Mm. I never wanted to be a teacher. I did a bit of teaching while I was at university in one of my summer holidays. I like went to Burma with a group of volunteers and we taught these kids on a rubbish dump. The school was built on a rubbish dump and they were a refugee tribe. We did it as like a charity project. and it was incredible to me teaching these kids. I really enjoyed helping them learn English. Something about being a teacher just lit this fire inside of me. And I ended up doing this graduate scheme called Teach First, which puts university graduates into the bottom 25% performing schools in urban locations. And the idea behind it, it's an American idea, was to get people from traditionally red brick universities into schools where the kids were not benefiting from, I don't know. I think it's to do with privilege, isn't it? And it's about sharing privilege. And so for me, I was placed in a school in Nottingham, which is near where I grew up. And I was thrown into this situation as a graduate with all these kids from various backgrounds who had huge amount of talent, but often not a lot of resilience because they've grown up in difficult circumstances. And mate, I fucking loved it. I loved it. I loved it. I got these kids doing all kinds of crazy stuff. I changed the history syllabus and we did like more diverse history. I did the Indian independence movement because a lot of the kids were Indian and from Indian or Pakistani backgrounds. And so we talked about that and getting rid of the British, decolonization, all these stuff that I was like, wow, what can we pick out of the national curriculum that will inspire you? And so for about 8 years, I did that and I loved it. I taught in a private school for a little bit. I taught in a grammar school in London and I taught all kinds of different kids. I just love teaching. But the thing that pushed me into comedy was I had this kid I was teaching history A level. She was so inspiring. And I asked her one day, I was like, what are you doing over the summer? And she said, oh, miss, I've got an internship at BBC. I'm doing like an internship for BBC something or other. And I was like, I wasn't happy for her. I was jealous. I was just like, oh my God, I'd love to do something like that. All I've ever done is teach. I went straight from school into university, straight from university into teaching. And I've done it for 10 years. I've never actually stopped. And I quit with no job to go to. And just this idea in my head of like, I want to do something creative, but I haven't got a clue what that is. And I moved back in with my parents, age 29. Which they were very, like, they were great about that. And I just sort of started, I don't want to think of a better way of putting it other than dicking about, but I basically just started dicking about. And I dicked about for marketing agencies and I tried to get stuff published. I started writing a bit. I did some comedy gigs that went badly and I just carried on. Eventually I moved to Bristol and over the years I've just sort of, you know, carried on messily, just figuring stuff out. But it hasn't felt like too much of a difficult transition from teaching into this. There's loads of overlap between, you know, like being a teacher, being a comedian, being a writer. They all involve people. It all involves talking to people. It all involves like coming up with stuff. I do miss teaching.
That's really nice. Not to say you couldn't go back to it and not to say that you don't use your teaching ability in other ways at all.
I miss it. I loved it. Honestly, I loved it. It's the best job in the world. The only problem is it takes up everything you've got. It takes totally everything you have. And I'm a mum now, and I think teaching was harder than being a mum in some senses because, you know, you might have 200, 300 kids that you're responsible for getting their exam grades that are going to be life-changing. And so the responsibility of being a teacher is massive, which means that any teachers deserve... They deserve better pay. They deserve a medal. It's really hard being a teacher. It's obviously hard being a mum, but as a career, I you know, one of the other reasons I left is because it was really hard work. And I think I wanted something easier, if I'm honest. I think inherently I'm lazy and I just wanted to be able to get a cup of tea and go to the toilet whenever I wanted.
Well, you say, I mean, and there's no shame in that, but what I find quite, I'm sort of smiling inwardly here, is that you're saying, you know, you wanted something easier, and so you went into comedy. You know, there's a lot of people that say, of all the things you could choose to do, yeah, we understand that, you know, you thought teaching was a bit much, you'd done 10 years, you'd done a decade, you were working in some really underprivileged, you know, challenging schools, you were using your privilege well, and you were doing some really radical stuff there, and you really were. So no one can blame you for wanting to have a gear change. And it was interesting because, as you said, you went and moved back in with your mum and dad, I was just thinking at that point in the story, I wonder what her mum and dad had to say about this. I can just imagine what my response would be from my two parents. I have a very sensible mother and a slightly, what should we say, unconventional father. My mum would have instantly taken the, oh, Faye. And my dad would have instantly gone, oh, well done. Can I do it as well? Can I join him? So those are the response I get. It's interesting because this was before you were a mother yourself.
Yeah.
Do you now look back at some of those moves and decisions you made with different lenses now that you are a mother and some of those decisions that you made?
Oh, good questions. So I think, first of all, my parents are a little unorthodox. It's important to say that. They're both of them separately wonderful, unique individuals with really strong characters. And if it wasn't for my dad having set up his own business really late in his career and like basically put all of our life savings into this business and gamble it all in his late 50s, I don't think that career change would have made sense in the same way that it did. But when I went home and I was like, I don't know if I want to do it anymore, they genuinely welcomed me with open arms. I remember crying in the garden with my dad, and the relationship me and my dad have is very, very, very reserved and very old fashioned. Do you know what I mean? And so for me to sit there crying, he just put his arms around me and just gave me all this encouragement. And as I went into marketing, he has just been my biggest advocate and has helped me so, oh, for God's sake, he's helped me so much.
Oh, Joe.
Right, sorry.
No, it's out. Well done. Yeah. Out, done. Well done.
So they're amazing. And I just, yeah, as a mum, to your second point, with my children now, I'm quite mindful of kind of, I suppose, selfishly, not wanting to push them into traditional career paths and not wanting to push them at all. And not, I think that I was pushed necessarily. I don't think I was particularly, but I think of a certain generation, there is this perception that you need to get a degree and go and do a career. And everyone else in my family, you know, had a degree in a career and was a doctor or an accountant. And for me to then ditch it all and go off and try and be a comedian probably was quite embarrassing for everyone. And everyone just took it really well. I remember I took my dad to one of my gigs and he didn't speak to me afterwards, and he went to put me on the train home. And as I was getting on the train, he went, well, that was a bit shit, wasn't it? It's like, yeah, thanks a lot. But actually, so one of the things with my kids is I'm letting them be themselves. You know, they are very much themselves, whatever that is. My 2-year-old loves drumming. So, you know, we're going to get her like a little drum kit soon and just let her bash it out. My 4-year-old loves dinosaurs and puzzles. And so we're just letting them figure out themselves. And I don't think at any point going to turn around and be like, you need to get 3 A's at A level and you need to go to a red brick university, unless that's what they want to do. But honestly, I think in this day and age, those aren't the skills really that are required anymore. So yeah, I think that's something I've taken from it, is like, as a mum, I just want to give my kids the freedom to explore. I'm not going to be like, right, you need to leave home at 18 and you need to go off to, you know, university, and then you can become a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant. You've got a choice of all three. I think I'm just going to be like, do what the fuck you want, and I'll support you. And if you'd rather have the money for university to start your own business, then I'll help you. And if you need somebody to shout your corner, then I'll do it for you and I'll be there for you. And that's what my dad did for me.
That's amazing. That is amazing. Yeah. And it's interesting because it was a very much a set route. You know, you do your A levels. If you're academic, you go off, you go to university and you become one of this list of 5 professions. I don't know how many there are, maybe 7. And that is the path. That is what you do. I really like the period that you talk about where, I'm going to call it dabbling, where you were dabbling a bit. You were doing a bit of this, you're trying a bit of this, a bit of that. You were not necessarily the best at any of it, but you were just giving it all a go. what, and I do appreciate, I keep coming back to comedy, but you, I want to ask, what made you relentlessly pursue it, even though, to quote you, you're a bit shit? You know, there aren't many people who would think, really rubbish. I'm going to go back and do that again. I'm going to go and stand on the staging and I'm going to do it again.
Well, I mean, right, listen, all you've got to do is ask any comedian. They'll tell you the same thing, I think, which is that when you have a gig that goes well, there is nothing better. There is no better feeling in the world. And I had a taste of it when I was living in London. And I just felt like I had found my thing. And I did some, like, in my 20s, I did some gong shows and I did some open mic nights. And I loved it. And I think I've always tried to make people laugh. I think I just like, I don't know, I think I like, this is a bit lame, isn't it? But I like making people happy. Mm. And I like poking fun at myself. Mm. And when I got up on stage, it was like how I felt as a teacher. Mm. Combined with this desire to sort of poke fun at life. And it's very cathartic as well. That's the other thing, is if you've got in your life any challenges, as a comedian, you can work it out. Mm. And you can poke fun at anything. And once you poke fun at something, actually, it's sort of very healing. So when I was in Bristol in my late 20s and early 30s, single, having left my career, recently been dumped, you know, it's a bit pathetic. I cut my hair right back and dyed it pink. Of course I did. I got a massive back tattoo. And I was just fumbling around, like from one open mic night to the next, making a twat of myself. But I was so happy. And I don't know what to tell you other than it just felt right. And I was just doing it. And at the time, I eventually ended up running a comedy night with a mate of mine. And all of that back then, before I became a mum, was very good for, you know, my sort of good for my head. It was good for my sense of myself. It didn't matter to me what anyone thought. I didn't give a shit if, you know, my family were a bit embarrassed about it and didn't really want to support it. I didn't care if my friends thought I was, my latest material was embarrassing and dog shit. I just thought, this is what I'm doing and I'm poking fun at myself, and I loved it. And I don't do it anymore. I mean, I want to be completely open about that, because there are people out there who are gigging constantly, who are extremely funny and who you should pay to go and see. Mm. And I'm not one of those people at all. I'm just somebody that for a few years I dabbled about in it and had some amazing experiences and met some people that I'm still really good friends with. And I think that's what I've taken from it. I do occasionally still gig and I love it. And I love the feeling of making people laugh and I really enjoy it. But I also selfishly don't have the headspace. I don't have always the energy for it now. At the end of the day, once my kids are asleep, I just think the last thing I want to do is go into town and and wait around to do 5 minutes of material. All I want really is, you know, some Netflix and then an early night with my hot water bottle. But I'm hoping that, like, as I get older, there might be a point at which I can come back to it, and it's always going to be there. But for anybody who wants to do comedy, I should say you should try it. You know, if you feel like it's within you to want to get up and do it, then do it. There's loads of places you can do it. There's loads of Facebook groups for people who want to start out. There are courses you can do. There are people teaching it. There's so many ways in now, and there's lots of people doing online content that's funny, and that's how they come into it. And it's just amazing for me to watch all of that from the sidelines, cheering people on that I gigged with who are now on, like, Live at the Apollo, or who have got their own tours, or who have become influencers. And you just think, wow, this is amazing. I'm happy for you, and I love watching that happen. But I'm also secretly kind of, I don't know if I've got the stamina for it. I think there are people out there who are extremely dedicated. I'm not one of them anymore, but for a time I was, and I loved it.
Sounds like when you were talking about, you know, with your hair was dyed pink and you got this amazing tattoo, the word that was coming up, or the phrase that was coming up to me, was, it sounds to me like you were in your element. You know,
yeah,
you were
absolutely
in your element at that point in time. And that's good, and that's right to say. I mean, as you were talking about it, it also reminded me a bit of the period of time in my own life that I, when I look back on, I wouldn't have put it in my element, but I refer to it as my Bridget Jones years, you know, late 20s, early 30s. I was doing lots of freelancing and lots of different radio stations. I was single. I was going out a lot. And I sorry, this is me interviewing you, but I must know, it reminded me of this story.
I'm loving it.
I used to go out on a Saturday night and drink too much wine and wake up on a Sunday morning, and I had to go and put the radio station on air. And it was a radio station in Weston-super-Mare, Star FM. And so putting the radio station on air at 5 o'clock in the morning is quite a big thing. You're the only person there. You've got a banging headache for a start. You not only have got to put the radio station there, but you've got to open up the building. You've got to do all these various things. And every single Sunday, so I'd have been out on the Saturday night, I'd be in there at five, and I'd be putting all the security codes in. And if you got them wrong more than three times, it would alert the local police station. Mm. And I quite regularly would put the alarm code in wrong more than three times. So not only would it alert the local police station, but it would also alert the station manager of the radio station, who would sort of phone up and say, "Morning, Faye, we're hungover again." And it was just it might be a little bit sheepish. But yeah, I think those years of kind of enjoying adulthood and being in your element and living this sort of slightly, I don't know, rebellious, haphazard life. It's very informative, but you can't do it forever. Live like that at all. I want to move on a bit, and I want to talk a bit about motherhood and freelancing. And you now have a successful business, which you clearly attribute some of that to your father. And I'd love to hear about his business, but I think we might be going on one too many tangents.
Definitely not. Yeah.
But how is it? How are you now today? You have two daughters, 2 and 4. So, you know, you've been self-employed for some time. Motherhood, you've been a mother for 4 years. How does that set of challenges now work today?
Well, I became a mum. And at the time I set up my business, I had been going 2 years. And it was in those early years, going from strength to strength. I had my daughter, and when she was 4 months old, the pandemic hit and we went into lockdown. And it meant that everyone's jobs changed and went online. And at that point, I had a 4 month old daughter and a mortgage and a husband who was a sound engineer, and his work had been affected, obviously. And we were in the situation where we're thrown into lockdown. And so, yeah, for me, carrying on with my business was almost the most straightforward part of my life, and has continued to be a really calm, centered thing that I do. My life around my work is, like I'm sure a lot of mums can relate to this, often full of varying levels of responsibility and obligation, and at times it's very, very high intensity. It can be quite chaotic. My younger daughter was very unwell when she was born. She was born early, and this was during lockdown as well, so she came during, I think, the third or fourth lockdown. I had a under 2 year old at home. I was running a business. I had my second daughter, and then when she was born, she was really unwell, and we nearly lost her twice. Around this time, my dad also got very unwell. And so all this stuff was happening in my life that was really grown up. All of a sudden, lots of responsibility, lots of trips to the BRI, lots and lots of juggling. My business, meanwhile, was just ticking along. So for me, my business is very much my rock. And I don't know if other people can relate to this, or whether this is just how I've kind of treated it. The lean in my business is my dad's concept, because he was an engineer and he believed in doing stuff efficiently. So that's one of the foundations of the business. And I wanted to work with clients, and I wanted to do content marketing, and I knew that, but I wanted to do it in a sort of straightforward way, straight talking way, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I set up my business, and then life happened. I got married, I got pregnant, the pandemic hit, and all these crazy turbulent things kept happening. My business meanwhile, in the background, clients obviously come and go, but they're developed over the period of years, this way of working, set of processes, which for me as a, you know, a copywriter was designed around my team to give them and the client minimum stress, maximum transparency. Everyone knows what's happening. Everyone knows when it's happening. Everyone is able to talk to each other. And it's because my background was in agencies for a couple of years, and I was a copywriter in those agencies. And often I felt pressured by deadlines, worried about my workload and worried about the quality of my work. And I just wanted to make sure that that wasn't something that was a concern for people I worked with if I stepped up to become like client facing. So yeah, motherhood for me is obviously a journey. And there are parts of my motherhood journey which have been very difficult to manage and which have been really sad. There are moments, of course, of pure joy. And at the moment, my family, touch wood, is in an amazing place and my kids are doing really well and they're thriving. But there was a ropey couple of years there where it was kind of all hands to the pump. And meanwhile, in the evenings and at the weekends and when I had time, I would come back to my business and I'd do some work for a couple of clients and I'd invoice them. And for me, that was like the best thing in the world, because, you know, I was breastfeeding, I was exhausted, I had these tiny vulnerable children who needed me, and a lot of that is very heavy. And then you can just do some work that you've put your name to and you can get paid for it. As a mum, it's like, I'm still a person, I still exist, I still have a financial function within this family, I can be independent, I don't need to rely on somebody else's charity. And for me, that was fundamental. Like, I was able to carry on paying the mortgage and bills. I went halves with my husband. As a feminist, it mattered so much to me. I was like, you're not going to fucking support me. I'm not a housewife. We're going halves. We're going to do this as a team. And being able to just even cover my half of the bills, even if I had nothing left at the end of the month, it was like, for my self-esteem, it really mattered. And it meant then I can go to the playgrounds and the soft plays and the, you know, all of that stuff with my head held high. Does that make sense?
Yeah, completely. I think there's I think that it makes complete and utter sense. I think it's both empowering and also it provides almost an escape at a point where you become a mother and a big part of your identity can be lost. Having the ability to go and just click that part of your brain back in again and to go and do the thing that you do and that comes so naturally, and to run your business, it gives you that sense of identity, which actually is really important. And it can be a really challenging time as a mother. So to have a world that you have created that allows you to go back in, turn that part of your brain on again, and then still be supportive to your family when needed and contribute to the bills, it's massive. Like, a massive well done to you, Jo. And having two girls during a pandemic, that's huge. That really is. And keep your business going. Like, hats off to you.
Thanks. To be fair, though, all of those things, I think they're all, I'm lucky. Like, do you know what I mean? I feel lucky with my daughters because of their personalities and who they are. They're really good fun. And I feel very lucky with my business because not everybody had a good pandemic. Not everybody had the privilege of being able to tinker in a career that they could moonlight in. Loads and loads of people, you know, had a really, really hard time. One of the good things for small business owners during the pandemic is there was a grant. So there was like a 10K grant that the government gave. And because at the beginning of the pandemic, I had an office, it meant that I could apply for this grant because I had like physical premises at that point. And I got that grant. And again, it's an example of like privilege, I think, that I was able to keep going and keep tinkering and keep that part of my identity, you know. And I saw good friends of mine losing their jobs when they were on maternity leave. So a few of my mates were put on furlough or given grant money, but then, you know, unscrupulously fired and then had to apply for jobs while they were still on maternity leave. And I luckily, because I was my own kind of, I had my own thing, it meant that even if I lost a client, I lost a client on my own terms. And mercifully at the time, I didn't lose any clients. I was able to flex, I was able to adjust to people. And I found that my business actually grew despite the fact that, you know, I had no sleep, small kids, because around that time during the pandemic, none of us had time to waste. And it wasn't a case of let's just, you know, mess about. You have to do for clients what they need. You have to listen really carefully and make sure the work you're doing is like as good as possible. I think I was a bit afraid that I was going to lose my job, my business. So I was like, right, okay, this has got to be as good as possible. The work has to be there and I have to keep on top of it. And I think that's something that maybe hasn't left me. I still find it hard to put it down at times, and I know I need to be better at switching off, especially at the moment. But it's kept me going. And I think one of the great things about being a freelancer, being a mum, is flexibility. So yeah, I feel like pleased to be in this position. I haven't forgotten what it was like to be a teacher. I haven't forgotten how hard it is when you, you know, I keep coming back to, you can't have a tea break when you want, but the privilege of being able to put the kettle on and schedule your meetings around your kids' nursery hours and do that, I think it is an amazing thing to be able to do. I don't know how long I'm gonna, you know, be lucky enough to carry on doing this, but there have been times where I've sort of felt like, can I keep going with this? And always something comes along. Do you know what I mean? And I think I'm just going to keep sort of trying at that, but obviously it's not perfect. I'm still learning.
You strike me as a woman who's on a mission, and you strike me as a woman who, yeah, you're to make a difference. And these are the things that have stood out through the different parts of your story. You've not taken the easy route. You're not scared to take on a challenge, and you do get results, and you want to get results. You know, you've done that in teaching, you've done that in your comedy, and you're doing it today in the work that you do. I mean, I love your approach to content and the use of the word lean content, because you're very empathetic. You understand that actually the marketing can be very draining to small business owners. Incredibly draining. So let's just cut to the chase and let's just do what you need to do. And I can almost hear the comedian in you here that's saying, let's just get the done and just get it done and get the results, because that's what we all want at the end of the day. We want to focus on the thing that we want to do. Is that your kind of your approach in life in general? Is that something you've instinctively done, or have you actually factored that into your approach as a business?
Christ. No idea. Honestly, I've got no idea. I am flying by the seat of my pants, to put it mildly. My dad had an expression about following his nose. One of his favourite things to do in life was to tinker. And I think I'm a tinkerer. I like a good problem. And so what better way to find constant problems than to run your own business? Yes. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I don't feel like I'm on a mission. Maybe I am. When I was a teacher, for sure, there was a mission statement. You know what I mean? There were goals. And now I think as a business owner, it's increasingly more about collaboration with people. Mm. And it's increasingly about the client and the client's vision. Mm. And every client's different. But you get some great marketing managers or heads of marketing, client side, who come over and they're like, right, we want to do this. And they haven't got the time, or they haven't got the people, or but they've got this idea in their head. And you can go, okay, you know, over a period of weeks and months, we're going to do this, regularly do this together. And all you need to do is give me access to your people, and I'll write the content that sounds like you. We'll publish it in all the right places, and it'll drive traffic to your website. And at the beginning, I think every client is like, is it really going to work? Like, but over time, like, you've seen some amazing results. There have been some, for some clients, some incredible results around, you know, bringing in leads, bringing in web traffic, getting them to page one of Google, getting them loads of money, you know. And that for me is a big reward, when the client comes back and they're like, yeah, this is going really well. Mm. You know, let's keep going. And they want to keep going. And the beauty of it is, with content, and this is just how it's turned out, like, this is not a mission of mine, it's not something I've purposefully done, it's just I've stumbled into this, which is that for me it's now mostly about people, and it's about stories. It's not really about the product or the service, although it obviously is, but it's much more about, you know, we've got these inspiring people and they're really smashing it in this way. We got this lady who had a 20-year career break and comes back and is an amazing coder. We've got this bloke who has transformed this, that, and the other. We've got this incredible guy who's great at this, and talking to them, understanding their story, and then writing it up is, I think, at the moment, what's working best for the clients and for us. And I think it's quite nice in a way, because content marketing 10 years ago was all about, you know, we want to find the keywords and we want to make sure that we're on page one. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But nowadays, I think obviously you need to have keyword and you need to have SEO. You need to make sure everything is kind of wrapped up in that way. But it's much more about the authentic voice of the brand and the authentic voice of the people within the brand. There's a saying that people buy people, and I think it's becoming truer because of the nature of the internet and the nature in which that businesses buy things. You want to buy from someone, you want to feel that personal connection. Sometimes we take a long time to make a decision. Like, it takes us a long time to pluck up the courage to buy something. Even, for example, with your business, you know, with Freelance Mum, you give people a taster and they turn up and they meet your team or, you know, your the Freelance Mum people who are on that walk, and it's that tips them over to becoming part of it. It's not necessarily, you know, about the social media posts. It's not necessarily about the branding, although that's there. It's about the people. And so for me now, content is all about people. It's all about stories, people, interviews after interviews, unpicking stuff, getting inside things. And like, if you're a marketing manager, it's just not something you have time to do. It's also awkward because if it's someone you work with day in, day out, you don't necessarily want to sit down with them and be like, go on then, spill your guts about your career journey. Because they'll be like, what? We were just having coffee together. This is a bit strange. You know, whereas if you're an outsider, you can sort of come in and almost like a journalist would. You can interview somebody and understand about their sort of ideas and path and then wrap it into a story. And so that's mostly what we're doing these days, and I'm enjoying that too.
Jo, it's really lovely to hear you talk today. Really lovely. I want to come back to the point. It is international, you know, the run up to International Women's Day, and those themes of being inspire and inclusive. What do you think we can do to make the world more inclusive for women in business? And what or who inspires you to keep going?
How long have you got? Wait, so let's start with who inspires me. Shitloads of people inspire me. When it comes to content marketing, it's all about me to begin with. Valuable Content, which is based in Bristol, Sonia Jefferson and Sharon Tanton, who inspired me massively. You've also got people like the lady behind Watertight Marketing, which is an incredible book written by also another Bristol content marketing person. There are loads of great agencies in Bristol run by women. There are loads of people high up in marketing in Bristol who have got a voice and who are great to follow. So for me, there's a ton of people that inspire me. I'm also part of something called Mums in Marketing, which is a bit like Freelance Mum. It's like a sort of mums networking group. That's been amazing for me. I've met loads of cool people through that. I feel inspired all the time by people around me, whether they're kind of mums or not. If they're female and they're in the workplace and they're out there doing it, I love that. And I think it's fair to say, not just women, but people who are kind of in any minority group, it's important to sort of be inclusive in that way, of people who are non-binary and people who are transitioning and people who don't fit into that kind of heteronormative role. It's important to be inclusive of everybody. How do we make the workplace more inclusive? Oh, I mean, I don't know is the truth. I've worked in places that felt that they weren't inclusive. And what they had in common, I suppose, was fear in organisations, fear of change. I think organisations that embrace change and aren't afraid of diversity do really well. And diversity across a range of spectrums. So not just gender, but also about ethnicity and different types of, you know, neurotypical versus neurodivergent people. And I've seen in real life that the more diverse the place is, whether it's a school or a business, generally speaking, better it does. And actually, even if you look at things like on telly, like the Great British Bake Off, if you look at series one versus the most recent series, you can see how much it's embracing, trying to embrace inclusivity and diversity. Businesses are too. Some of them are doing it in, you know, more quickly than others. But I think for me, with most of my clients, not all of my clients, diversity is like at the front of their business plan. It's so important to them and for them to have a range of people, because it's stupid not to. If you've only got one type of person working for you, then ultimately your work won't be very good, because it's only going to reflect a narrow perspective. So for women, I think the more women in the workplace, the better, but also the more diversity, the better. And I do follow people online like Pregnant Then Screwed and Flex Appeal. So these people who are creating movements around things like, you know, ending discrimination during pregnancy, flexible working, which I think comes from, what's the name of the podcast?
Oh, is it Mother Pucker?
Yes, Mother Pucker, Dirty Mother Pucker. So I follow her as well. And I'm massively inspired by those kind of people who are also being really outspoken about the discrimination that occurs when you become a mum. And I, aside from, you know, the need to be aware of diversity around gender and around ethnicity and around religion and all these other things, there is, I think, a bit of a lag around motherhood. And I felt, for me, when I went into motherhood, being hit full force in the face by the patriarchy. And I skipped through my 20s as a feminist. And when I became a mum, I was like, oh, this is where it kicks in. All of a sudden, you know, my husband goes back to work after 3 weeks and gets a promotion and a slap on the back. Meanwhile, I'm doing breastfeeds through the night. I've got no energy. And I'm expected not to work for a year. And when I go back to work, I'm going to get paid less. I'm going to get less respect. It felt sometimes like being a mum and pushing a pram means that people don't see you literally on the pavement, but that's physical. I mean, figuratively, women, mothers need to be more vocal online. And I think there need to be more different voices around motherhood as well. We've got this same single voice out there at the moment, which is this kind of, I feel bad saying this, but this kind of perfect parent, or this person who is gentle parenting and doing all these wooden toys and has this immaculate home. And I think the internet is unhelpful sometimes for mothers. There are some people on the internet and in real life who are keeping it real about motherhood and how hard it is. I think we need more of those voices, more authentic people saying, I'm sleep deprived and I feel ignored. My body has been taken over by something. I've got this amazing child in my life, but the responsibility of life and death is terrifying. And I feel alone. Where's my village? What's going on? And I think there needs to be more support in place for mums. And it wasn't for me until I came out the other side of my youngest kid's illnesses that I felt like I could go out networking and go out and meet other mums. Because when I was going through all of that, the fog descended and I just had to power through it. It wasn't until I felt healthy again that I could get out and sort of meet people. So I think there are some mums who are properly in the thick of it. When your kid is under two and you're trying to juggle everything, sometimes it can feel impossible to do something for yourself and do self-care, and it's so hard. And I think until you've had kids, you properly don't know what it's like. So I think the more visibility there is around motherhood, the more inclusivity there will be, the more authentic voices we get of people who are just literally like, wow, this is really hard, and also there's a huge disparity between my experience and that of my partner. The more of that that gets talked about, the more the legislation will catch up. Because I also feel that there isn't the legislation in this country to support women at all. There are some countries where there's parity of parental leave. There are some countries that support flexible working. There are some countries where people don't pay childcare or their government subsidizes it so that it's kept below a certain point. And in this country, we're paying, what, $2,000-$3,000 a month? Sometimes more than your salary to put your kid into nursery when they're under two and they're screaming at the door. You feel like a terrible person for having a career, and there just isn't that balance at all. I don't have an answer, but all I know is I'm fucking angry.
You do say it like it is, Joe, and that's what we love about you. I was just sitting there nodding along and just thinking, Blimey, she's on a roll here. This is amazing. And you and I'm sorry to say, you know, because I know yours are 2 and 4 and you're saying how hard it is in the 2 and 4. And I echo that. Actually, it doesn't change. You know, mine are now 9 and 11. And it's just it's ages and stages. it's just a different set of needs. It's a, you know, and the fog comes and goes in different ways. But yeah, you do need to find your people and to walk the walk, because it is impossible to do it alone. Jo, thank you so much for your time today. It's been an absolute joy talking to you. It really, truly has. And go and enjoy making a cup of tea exactly how you want to.
Thanks for joining us on the Freelance Mum podcast. I'm Faye Dicker, and don't forget, you can make a date with us every Wednesday on the Freelance Mum online coffee morning or at a local NetTalk near you. Come and try us out for free for 30 days at freelancemum.co.uk.